It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station FM 107.1. And joining us, of course, this afternoon, we have Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. And as I begin the program, I do want to remind you, please, don't hesitate to give them a call. 252 area code 726-9050. Or if you wish, go online to harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, harvellandcollins.com. And with that, Cecil, Wes, Happy New Year to the two of you. Welcome to the program.
Happy New Year.
Yeah. So the first program
Absolutely.
Of the year.
Absolutely. Here we go, Lockwood, 2025. Here it is right here upon us. Lockwood, today Wes and I are going to speak about a subject which maybe substantively is called administration of an estate. But right out of the gate, what does that mean? And what that means is just what happens when, someone in our family or friend or neighbor dies and there is the need to file a will and open up an estate and, if you will, administer, marshal together the assets, pay the bills, and distribute them to the heirs per the will. That sounds real simple, but as we can imagine, administering an estate can be complicated. Issues certainly can arise. And so let's kind of begin at the very beginning with explaining how the administration of an estate begins. And Lockwood, it does begin with the location, if you will, and finding of the original will. And not a photostatic copy, but the original will, dark ink, if you will, maybe a raised notary seal, something that will indicate sometimes the quality of the paper, but something that will indicate that this is an original will. Right there is a hurdle, because sometimes folks will come in to see our law office, and they will say that they do not have the original and they cannot find it, but that they're certain that this photostatic copy is, in fact, the will, the last will and testament of their person. And what are we going to do about this? And, of course, sometimes that will be a green light for Mr. Collins, who heads up our litigation section of our law firm. In that right there, Lockwood, there can be some controversy, as you can imagine. It might be that someone in the family doesn't agree that that's the original will, doesn't agree that this is the proper photostatic copy. And so we can get into some questioning of the last will and testament just because we don't have the original. So our listeners are forewarned that the original of your last will and testament is very important. It does need to be kept in a safe place. Either your lawyer can keep it. Our law firm certainly has a procedure for keeping originals and a fairly sophisticated system at that in terms of indexing. And it can be kept in a lockbox at home, a safety deposit box at a bank. But the original is important, Lockwood, the original document. Now, the executor that's named in that original document is the person that will then sign the necessary paperwork to take the oath of office as executor and file the original document with the clerk, or either we would do it as the agent attorney for the executor. And once that is filed with the clerk, then the estate is open, and there is issued at that time, I like to call it an order of the court, which states that this particular person is, in fact, by court order, the executor, and they issue letters testamentary. And so letters testamentary is the ticket, if you will. It's the permission slip. It's the evidence to the world that this particular person, or two people if they're co-executors, are in fact the qualified executor of the estate. And therefore, the banks, the stock companies, the investment firms, the Register of Deeds, the DMV, the Motor Vehicles Department, anyone and everyone will be able to rely on that letter's testamentary. And right here I might say, Wes, when you are involved in, say, a wrongful death case or some sort of litigation concerning the estate, that is one of the first things you're going to need, correct?
Right. Any litigation involving an estate is going to require, of course, an estate to be opened. And this could be if the, like you say, a wrongful death claim is being brought by the estate. You know, this could be if the person died in a motor vehicle accident, then obviously the estate is going to proceed with that proceeding. And you don't just, you know, it's not like the surviving spouse has authority to just proceed forward. You have to go through the process of having the appropriate party put in place, which is the administrator or executor under this order you refer to called, you know, letters, to be put in place by the clerk of court. So you then have standing to proceed forward, you know, properly. Otherwise, you'll be, you know, kicked out of court. You'll be dismissed on the case. So, yes, and that could be, you know, any type of, not only on the plaintiff's side, it could be on the defendant's side. It could be on, or if we're seeking recovery from an estate, and I'm representing someone seeking the recovery, but let's say that the person has died and owes money to my client. Well, if that estate was never opened, well, I even have the authority representing that creditor to force the estate to be opened if the appropriate party, like under the will, the executor, if there is a will, or the family, closest family member, doesn't open the estate. So, yeah, it's necessary not only in the normal progression of wrapping up the affairs under our North Carolina general statutes when someone dies, it's also necessary and required if there's any form of litigation where an estate has to be a party, and that form of litigation can take all types of appearances, plaintiffs, defendants, claims against estates, claims for estates. So, yes, that is a necessary requirement to basically, you know, the way to think about it is that the estate is really seen as a separate entity / person, really. And it just doesn't exist at all until the clerk of court properly allows it to exist after all the technical formalities have taken place with the proper filings and those letters / order is entered. So it's just a fallacy. It's not there until, boom, that is done. So it's just a process that has to be done in order to, you know, deal with any aspect of litigation involving the state.
Okay, I'm going to let me interrupt for a quick question related to that, and interesting observation that you made, Wes, and that is, of course, a third party forcing the opening of an estate. Is it conceivable that an estate, let's say a single individual dies, they have established an estate, but the estate, could the state lay fallow, never be open, or is there a time limit that requires the estate to be open, that sort of thing, to be basically to be dealt with? That's my description. Is there some sort of time limit, some requirement?
I mean, it can be dealt with at any point in time. I mean, if people certainly pass away and folks don't do anything with the estate.
Right.
Okay? And that happens sometimes. And it could be that it's by law, if there's a will and someone passes away, you're required to put that on record.
Okay.
Because otherwise we don't know where the assets go. But sometimes folks die. Obviously, they don't have a will, and nothing is done with the estate. Well, if that's the case, then Well, if they didn't have any debts, well, okay, fine. There was no creditor to force the estate to be open, so they didn't do it. If there are not any loose ends, like, let's say, vehicle titles, things like that, transferred, then maybe no issue comes up at any point in time with regard to not opening the estate. But in most cases, if, you know, folks live their lives, they develop a little bit of assets of some sort. They have somewhat of an nest egg. They maybe have a vehicle, other things. If there's no attention to dealing with the estate, normally after a period of time, a problem arises.
Right.
Something happens.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to sell this car, trying to get access to this life insurance, trying to get access to this account. They say that, this is kind of what a client may say, they say, the bank says, the life insurance company, the whatever, they say.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or they say that, hey, they can't help us until this estate is open. Well, Dad died 6 years ago. We didn't do anything about it. Well, okay, guess what? We need to open the estate, and we need to follow the procedure. Otherwise, this problem, whatever it may be that's in front of you, is not going to go away. We need to correct that. So there's not like a date certain that's like, okay, date of death, person dies January 1st, 2025, you have to open the estate, you know, within a year, or by January 1st, 26, or 2 years, or 3 years, or five, or whatever. But, you know, normally it's done, you know, within, you know, 30 days, 60 days of the date of death. But it could be done at a later date. But in many cases, let's say has credit card debt or medical debt,
right,
and nobody does anything with regard to opening the estate, well, guess what? The credit card company can go open the estate, and they're in control of it.
Okay.
And then they're selling the assets to pay their debts. Same thing with medical debt or any other kind of debt.
All right.
So, Lockwood, just to get back focused here, the fascination in this for our listeners is the fact that the law, which is sometimes, as I just used the word, very fascinating, the law has a mechanism whereby there is accountability to the court.
Mm-hmm.
There is accountability to the heirs. There's accountability to, if you will, many times the family when there isn't a will. And that accountability begins with the qualification of an administrator / executor with this court order known as the letters testamentary, letters of administration. And so, like Wes is explaining, the insurance company is frozen. The account is frozen.
Mm-hmm.
The title to the car and or mobile home can't be changed. DMV is not going to change it because they don't know who has the authority.
Right.
The bank doesn't know. The life insurance company doesn't know. The list is endless of the people that could potentially have, you know, some involvement in the estate, but their hands are tied because they do not know who to account to. They do not know who is in charge. And so there has to be, it all begins, the administration of an estate, with the court appointing a person, if you will, Lockwood, to be in charge. And with that appointment, then comes accountability. That's the quid pro quo. That's the important thing that Wes and I explained today. Because once the court administers an order saying you are in charge, the court now has the authority to say, well, you have to present a 90-day inventory.
Whoa.
You have an annual and or final accounting. Where is it? And if you do not file this 90-day inventory in a timely manner or either get an extension, if you do not file an annual accounting 1 year after qualifying as administrator, then the Superior Court has the authority to send out the sheriff, and summon you to a hearing. And if you don't show up for the hearing, the sheriff has the authority. There can be an order from the court that you be arrested. So there is accountability here, Lockwood. The executorship, the administrator of the estate, is a very important position, and they then have the authority to wind up the affairs of the decedent. And that, of course, is how we got off into kind of the litigation mode.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They're the ones that need to finish the collecting of the debt if there was a lawsuit pending. They're the ones that need to wind down the business. And maybe the business was involved in some sort of litigation at that time. The executor is the one that has to look into the potentiality, as we discussed earlier, of there maybe was nursing home negligence or medical negligence, or there was vehicle negligence. Any of those issues, all of those issues are going to rest with the administrator / executor, and they're going to have the authority to get legal assistance, hire a good lawyer, and proceed on with those matters. That's where the authority rests.
You know, the question then goes to this is a significant responsibility, Cecil, and of course that's Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins, along with Wes Collins. Here we've got a situation where there is, if you will, a lot of technical needs and abilities that I, as the executor, have very little knowledge about. So I have several questions. How do I protect myself? And I want to get back to what are the ramifications for me as the executor, by the way. But how do I go about this? Do I pay for this out of my own check account? What's the procedure here? Because now I'm going to need serious professional services from you, from an accounting firm, any number of sources. How do I go about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, the expenses of an estate are allocated to the resources within the estate. And you ask a good question, Lockwood, because it is not the personal responsibility of the executor or the administrator to pay for the expenses, the lawyer fees, the accounting fees, the bills of the estate. Say, for instance, that there might be a pending IRS bill or lien or something of that nature, credit card statement. All of those things vest against the assets of the estate. The executor is in charge of those assets and needs to be careful in the way in which they pay those kinds of expenses, but they are paid off the top of the estate before anything is distributed to the heirs or beneficiaries. And this is an issue that we as lawyers, address on a daily basis. I mean, we sometimes have to kind of get the ducks mm-hmm. in order. There are priorities under our state law, under our statute. There's a statutory scheme of how creditors are paid, whether they're secured, unsecured, what class of creditor they happen to be. Yes, Lockwood, it can get very complicated very quickly. Now, with that said, there are those estates with this happens frequently at our law firm, and I want to hasten to say this, where, a surviving wife comes in, she's lost her husband, they've been married for, 50 years, everything is joint, there are no debts, there are no pending collection issues, no business to maintain, no litigation pending in any way. And it's a procedure that the wife, if she's willing, and many are, that they can handle. Mm-hmm. And we just simply will tell this good client or potential client that go ahead and open up the estate with the clerk of court. If there are any questions, let us know. If you need us to dot an I, cross a T, then we'll be glad to do that with you. But we do not have to get involved in every single inquiry that comes to our law firm, Lockwood, with regard to an estate. Now, most folks, when they call the law firm and make an appointment to see one of us for, to open up an estate, there are issues, there are concerns, mm-hmm. and so we do get involved in quite a few of those. But sometimes it's not necessary to have an attorney. But if you do hire an attorney, then those expenses are by law allowed to be paid off the top of the estate. And if you think about that again, all these things are so interesting, maybe to only me.
No.
Lockwood isn't interesting. Here again, we see where the law is such a wonderful thing. It makes perfect sense that the law would encourage a person to seek professional help, an accountant, a lawyer, mm-hmm. an appraiser. It makes perfect sense that the law would then say that those expenses, because the executor needs guidance, needs assistance, needs to file the final accounting information with the Internal Revenue Service, Department of Revenue, that therefore we, the law, say that those expenses are paid off the top, and we allow those reasonable expenses to be paid. So you see that over and over again, hundreds and hundreds of years of jurisprudence comes into play and guides we lawyers as well as the clerks of court and, of course, ultimately the clients as to how an estate is to be administered.
You know,
the big picture is that this executor marshals together all of the assets, marshals together all of the issues relative to that estate, mm-hmm. many of which I just kind of alluded to. We've given you kind of a short list of some of the things that arise in an estate, like collecting a debt, a wrongful death, negligence, things of that nature. They marshal together not only the assets, but they marshal together the issues. And then they work with the attorney firm to be able to resolve these issues one by one, ultimately with a distribution per the last will and testament out to the beneficiaries.
You know, the observation I was going to make there, Cecil, is that being identified as an executor to an estate sounds very intimidating. However, as you've just pointed out to me, this is something that is accounted for legally speaking. And so, you know, if an individual is named as an executor, now obviously I want to talk to you about the ability for an individual to resign if they can as an executor, what's the process. But if they are named as an executor, they need not be intimidated by all of what we're talking about relative to marshaling together all of this information and trying to organize it, and for that matter, I'll use the word defend it, because the services are there. They're readily available. I mentioned accounting. I mentioned legal services, and you mentioned appraisals as well. The law has removed, if you will, some of the intimidating aspects of this. But the other aspect of being an executor to an estate is the time involved. Sometimes there are required meetings, there are required activities, and I'm wondering if someone finds themselves in a situation where they cannot adequately meet those requirements, can they resign? And if so, what's the procedure for doing so?
Well, they absolutely, first of all, they might not wish to qualify in this very beginning stage, and we do have that happen, usually because the appointed person is maybe of advanced age, maybe they are fighting a medical situation, you know, maybe they've moved away, whatever the case might be, and we then hope that the document has an alternate, don't we, Lockwood, as we've discussed often in this program, that the document would have an alternate named executor. But yes, there is no requirement that the executor qualify. They can simply renounce. Secondly, you're asking if they do qualify and it turns into a brouhaha, then yes, they can resign. But guess what, Lockwood? Remember what we said earlier? There's this order of the court, and there is this accountability policy has been established. Ooh. And so in order to, if you will, quit your job, you're going to need to get the permission of the court to do that. You're going to need to go back to the court and petition that you be removed as executor and that so-and-so be qualified, and that would require court approval.
That's something I hadn't even considered. All right, the other aspect of this then, Cecil, and I'm jumping ahead possibly in our conversation, and we're talking with Cecil Harvell of and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. And just to remind you, don't hesitate to give them a call, 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050. Cecil, in a situation where an individual hasn't been named as an executor, is it reasonable for an attorney or possibly, let's say, the estate only leaves a minor child for someone who may be incapacitated for some medical reason. Is it reasonable for the attorney to become an executor or maybe a third party, such as, I'll use the term, a bank? Is it conceivable? Is that advisable?
Well, Lockwood, that's just kind of a very loaded question. That's a good question, but still, a bank would not be involved in an estate as an executor unless they were named in the document. Mm-hmm. The clerk of court, our superior court, is just not going to all of a sudden, you know, impose that duty upon, you know, a good, solid banking institution. Now, if the client had named a bank in the document, a banking institution or a trust company or a corporate fiduciary, those are many times called in the document, then the clerks of court and the superior court is certainly going to honor that request of the client. Your question is boding a bit toward our what might be called our public administrator. Each and every county in our state has an attorney. Usually it's an attorney. It doesn't have to be, but it almost always is, who serves in a capacity to serve as executor and or administrator when there just isn't one, when there it hasn't been one to qualify, or one has wanted to resign and the court feels that they should allow that, then they will sometimes appoint the public administrator to be the to be the, if you will, executor of the estate. I think that answers your question.
It does. I didn't know this
as best as it could. Yeah.
Well, it does. I didn't know such existed. So, basically, again, the court system has established procedures for the handling of estates and managing them. That's impressive. Mm-hmm.
You know, there is that adage out there, you know, a trust is not going to fail for want of a trustee. The same applies to an estate. An estate is not going to fail, if you will, for want of an executor or administrator. The law understands that the importance many times of the duties of these folks. As Wes mentioned, it can be, you know, 6 years later, there's an asset, there's a piece of property, there's a mobile home, there's a vehicle. We do not want to encourage these kind of things to just lay dormant and in a confused state where nobody understands who owns them. And so the law encourages that there be settlement of these issues, that there be an estate created. And so therefore, yes, our legislature has laws in effect whereby there would be a public guardian that would serve sometimes in that capacity.
We're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins, the administration of an estate. Cecil, Wes, as always, appreciate your time here on Let's Talk Legal, and I'm looking forward to further conversations on this because I think this opens a variety of doors to talk about for estate management. I do want to commend you on that one. Always remind the audience, go to the website, harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, please, Harvell and Collins. And with that, Cecil, Wes, a good afternoon to you. Thanks for your time.
Okay.
Thank you, Lockwood.